This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Researchers report that animals have complex dreams and are able to retain and recall long sequences of events while they're asleep. Well, if they're like the rest of us, they're dreaming of spring. Maybe they're thinking, if they're songbirds, if only homeowners had more trees and shrubs for thermal protection. Have the rabbits or deer consumed everything in sight? Well, plan now to replace and rebuild. It's Wildlife Day with Jim Pease. We'll talk about the needs of wildlife and how you can fulfill them in your yard and have a beautiful yard at the same time. Join us this hour for Wildlife Day. We're live. We'll take your wildlife questions in 5 minutes following news from Iowa Public Radio and NPR. And welcome to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Wildlife Day on the program with Emeritus Professor at Iowa State, Jim Pease. And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a beautiful day outside. This, you know, I was driving in and that there's something gold up in the sky that was trying to peek through.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to make it today or not, but we've had a good 8 inches of snow where I am, and I plowed twice in the last 2 days.
So yeah, yeah.
It's time to think spring, actually.
Yeah, it's hard to think spring when it's.
It is, but it's the best thing we could do. You know, in fact, if you look out, watch around your feeders, the tree squirrels, whether you've got gray squirrels or fox squirrels or even red squirrels, right now they are beginning to chase each other around, and it's not just about food. This being almost Valentine's Day, it is the breeding season. Mid-February is the breeding season for squirrels, so they're beginning to get a little antsy and chase each other around, and it's not just about food now. It's about other things.
Okay.
So spring is coming, believe it or not. Mm. It is coming. So it's also a great time then to get out in your yard and or your land, whatever you have, and take a look around because, boy, with a foot and a half, 2 feet of snow on the ground, now's the time to really take a look at what's missing from your land in terms of wildlife. Is it food, water, shelter, that sort of thing?
I read that many wild animals perish during a long, hard winter, and it may be difficult to help the wildlife out in the countryside, but there is quite a lot you can do to lend a hand to those creatures living on your property or in your garden or in your backyard or something.
Yeah, it's all about habitat. Habitat is the key, no matter whether we're talking urban areas or rural areas, it doesn't matter. Habitat is the key. Believe it or not, things will survive, but certainly winter is the time at which things perish. It's one of the limiting factors in populations. For example, even critters that spend the winter hibernating underground sometimes don't make it. If they haven't gotten that burrow, the for example, 13-line ground squirrels or woodchucks, which is just a really big ground squirrel, if they haven't gotten that burrow below frost line, they may not survive the winter. It gets too cold for them, and they just simply die underground. So it is possible. Certainly, birds die during the winter, unable to make it through the terrible winter storms. Rabbits and that either can't make the transition from herbaceous or that more succulent vegetation in the summer to the woody vegetation that they consume all winter. Same with deer. They will simply starve to death because they haven't been able to make that. And even now, boy, you see things eating pretty marginal stuff. Shrubs and trees vary a lot in their palatability and their digestibility to critters like that. You and I, if we went out, if you got a nice aspen tree in your front yard, you know, we could eat that whole tree and we'd starve to death because we don't have the bacteria or the stomachs to digest that woody vegetation. But rabbits and deer, among other things, do. And that, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But sometimes if you don't have good food around, you turn to marginal things. And we're seeing that certainly this winter. We're seeing trees that are as big around as your forearm debarked. Well, what are they getting from that? Almost nothing. It is starvation behavior, basically. Mm-hmm. When you've got things that are, if you look at your index finger, that's about the largest tree or shrub that they can get much nutrition from at all. And you'll, if you go out and look around right now, you'll see anywhere, I think, in Iowa with this winter, lots of trees and shrubs that are debarked. And if they're larger than that, they're really getting very little nutrition.
I've done that myself, turned to some marginal things when you just have to. Sometimes.
Yeah. Did you eat that aspen in your front yard?
Sorry. I wanted to ask you, Rick Fredrickson from our IPR news staff said he has been spotting pheasants along the road.
Sure.
And his point was the snow cover is so deep and maybe the snow is ice on top, and they can't get through to find maybe some corn in the fields. Is this a problem for pheasants this year?
Yeah, it is. It's a problem for all kinds of things. Certainly, there are several things that affect the availability of grain. Fall plowing and fall tillage is one of the worst. That will even running it over it with a disc over fields in the fall. I really encourage farmers that I've worked with over the years not to fall till if they can possibly avoid it, because even a shallow chisel plow will bury over 90% of the available grain. Then you add on top of that the snow cover we've had, but what's worse is the ice. And the ice has mm-hmm. covered all kinds of stuff for turkey, for deer, for pheasants, for quail, for songbirds. There's very little ability to get down to any of that waste grain right now. So pheasants are out on the side of the road. They're actually out there for a couple of reasons. They will often come to the side of the road to pick up gravel, small rocks for their gizzards. Those are a bird's teeth is in their gizzard, the rocks they pick up. So they're there for getting that. They're probably picking up some salt along the way, too, and any spilled grain from trucks that have been to the side or been going to market and spilled a little along the way. Or if some has gotten turned up by the plow, that sort of, or by the snow plows, they will take that as well. So there really are a number of reasons they're there. But he's right in that if you look at our ditches right now, where they often are the only places of cover left around after harvest, in particularly the north central part of the state, the flat area of the state. Those ditches are absolutely filled with snow, and there's no way they can get into any cover. So they're there for a number of reasons, food as well as shelter.
It's Wildlife Day with Jim Pease, and we'll take your calls. Let's get those calls coming in. Lines open. Here's the number, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. 866-780-9100. I was reading, Jim, the temperature under a layer of snow does not usually fall below freezing. The heat from any animals or plants under the snow is trapped in a warm igloo. Now, that sounds kind of cozy. So it can be 20 below and still outside and still be above freezing in their little snow hideaways, right?
In fact, you can experience this if you'd like. This is the snow we've just had is the perfect snow for this. You can go build yourself an igloo, and you do that by taking a bunch of this nice fluffy snow and throwing it up in a pile of maybe 4 or 5 feet high, and let it sit there for an hour or so. And it's amazing what happens when the snow is sort of it reconfigures and it locks those snowflakes together better. And you can dig out underneath it and make your own igloo. I've actually slept in back in the days when I did winter camping. I've slept in a snow cave, digging that out, and with one candle in there. Mm. One candle in a snow cave is enough to really keep you very, very warm, and your body heat does as well. So it's pretty amazing. And a lot of critters will take advantage of that. You'll see pheasants in not such heavy snow, but in years where there's a light cover of snow, they'll dive underneath through the snow, get underneath those grasses and that, and it's really very toasty underneath there.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's go to our first caller. Lori is calling from Ames, and let's see. We'll punch the button. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Okay, got a question. I have about 10 or 11 bird feeders. I've got suet, open water, shelter. I had all kinds of birds until mm-hmm. last Friday. I have not seen other than a few chickadees, a couple cardinals, couple blue jays and some doves. The sparrows and everything else have gone. Any idea what's going on?
Well, there are a couple of possibilities. You may have a sharpshin or a Cooper's hawk hanging around picking off a few birds, and they'll avoid it for a few days. It was actually fairly warm before this last snowstorm, and a lot of birds, we noticed the same at our feeders. They will use wherever they can find other sorts of things. They'll use those warm periods to find wild food that might still be available on trees and shrubs and what few grasses are sticking up above the snow. They'll still find that elsewhere. But I suspect you probably have a sharpshin or a Cooper's hanging around that's made them a little wary for a few days, and they'll come back over the next few days. They'll okay. Show up again, because the Coopers and sharpshins, which eat birds, they will not hang around one place forever. They'll certainly move around quite a lot.
Yeah, I've seen a sharp shin around.
You bet. That's pretty common. And after all, they are bird feeders, and so you're feeding another bird as well.
It just surprised me, though, to have every single one of them just disappear off the face of the earth Saturday.
You know, we had at our feeders this winter an interesting experience when a sharp shin came in. Everything, we looked out the window, and everything was absolutely frozen in position. Some of the birds even had seeds in their beaks, and they wouldn't move. And so we knew there was a sharp shin or a Cooper's around. And they stayed like that for 10 minutes. It was just mm-hmm. amazing. Didn't move a muscle. Because the sharpshin really depends on movement to really key in on them, and they'll catch them, on the wing. So the birds have figured that out, and they defend themselves by staying absolutely still.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, keep watching.
You bet. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Lori. Yep. Lori calling from Ames, 866-780-9100. Got a break coming up, just a very short break. Jim, why do any birds stay around? Why don't they just, they can fly. Why don't they go to Tempe or?
Well, it's not so good down there right now either.
I suppose not.
Yeah, there are a lot of birds that actually come south here, spend the winter with us. All the juncos that you see, all those tree sparrows. They're here because this is the tropics to them.
Okay, it's better than Alberta.
Right, that's right.
Okay, we'll be back in just a minute as Talk of Iowa continues. Wildlife Day with Jim Pease. Lines open, 866-780-9100, or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org for your emails. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Wildlife Day with Jim Pease, Emeritus Professor at Iowa State. Must feel good to be an Emeritus Professor, Jim. You can do what you want to do, right?
That's exactly right.
I found this website, and I was reading through it, and I finally figured out it must be British, because they were referring to hedgehogs, and I don't think we have hedgehogs.
That's right.
But, they had some interesting points. The writer says it's easy to create winter homes for garden wildlife, either at home or in your school's garden. Just find a quiet corner or two behind a shed is often a good place, and make one or more of the following mini habitats, and we can discuss these. A pile of logs, ideal for... Okay, here's my question. What in the world is a mini beast? Is that a British... That must be a British term.
A mini beast. I think it's just a colloquial expression talking about small critters, probably anything from... mice and squirrels, ground squirrels to, hedgehogs in their case. But,
yeah, right.
But certainly what he's talking about is where are they going to, fulfill that one of their basic needs is shelter. And like I say, now is the time to get out and take a look around your yard and say, just where are they going to hide? Can they get out of the wind? How do they avoid predators, stay warm, and find food? And if you begin to look around, you realize that, well, I've got a lot of thermal cover for the birds and the mammals that spend the winter with us. They need to find a place that is really helps protect them. We've talked before in the program, in order to survive a winter here above ground, they have to take in a lot of food and convert that food energy to heat energy. That's what warm-blooded critters do. But the more cover they have, thick cover, particularly at night when they're resting, the easier it is for them because they don't have to find quite so much food. So the thermal cover includes evergreens, and that would be things like cedars and pines or spruces or firs or even a leaf plant like a boxwood. Are the ones in your yard, are they completely covered by snow? If so, then they're really useless for snowy winters. So think about something maybe a little taller as mm-hmm. well. And certainly cedars and white pine are both native, but the spruces and firs and boxwoods are not invasive, so they're okay as well as long as they'll grow in your soil. So you think about that thermal cover. And it points out on a larger basis, in fact, how important wetlands are, because most of our native grasses, while they're bunch grasses in our prairies, they hold up pretty well against winter winds, but these kinds of very heavy snows, and particularly the ice, has really devastated. I've got a small prairie in my place, and the grasses have really gotten weighted down this year. So you need something stronger than that to stand up against that. And this thermal cover in wetlands is provided by cattails and bulrushes that that stand up against the winter winds and the snow, and the birds can get underneath them and the mammals as well. So think about that thermal cover. That's the first thing to look at.
Yeah. Let's go next to Larry, who's been waiting on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Larry.
Yes, I live in a development. We've been here 2 years on the north edge. We've got cornfields north and east of us. We put out sunflowers in the summertime and get all kinds of birds. However, in the wintertime when I put out, multi-bird food, we get absolutely no birds at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because we have no existing trees, big trees?
Yeah, it's a matter of having cover nearby. Remember, the three things they need are food, water, and shelter. And in the wintertime, you may, particularly in new developments, you have no large trees or shrubs. And so this is the program for you, because what we're going to talk about here are what shrubs and trees should I be putting in. So first of all, think about winter cover, the things I just mentioned, the pines, the spruces, the firs, the cedars, that are going to – and you might clump a bunch of them in one corner of your yard or two corners of your yard so they've got some choices. Put two or three together there so they really form a dense sort of thicket that will help them get through the winter. The other thing you can do if you don't have that now, if you took do you use artificial or real Christmas tree?
Real.
Okay. Instead of putting it out in the curb, even with all the cover I've got around, I take mine and use an old Christmas tree stand and put it out about 6 to 10 feet away from one of my feeders. And it's amazing how they will use that, not so much for cover at night, but especially they have to feel safe in order to come to that feeder. And feeling safe means there's some shrubs nearby that they can get to in case a sharp shin or something else comes along. Fox trots through or something like that. They need to feel they can get into something that is sheltered for them. And so even discarded Christmas trees will work very, very well for that temporary cover. But certainly the ideal is planting something long term. So the more cover you have around the feeders, the better chance you're going to have of attracting birds.
Right. We live in a condo association, and all they gave us is one tree out front.
Ah, yeah.
We got permission, and we landscaped all around our unit.
Fantastic.
With grasses and shrubs. And then we also planted 6 trees on the side and the back, including one Colorado spruce, but the others are like oak and birch and willow and so forth, so they're going to take some time to get.
Yeah, it takes a while to get up there, but that's the key, is having that shelter around as well. And they'll begin to use it in the summer, and the more habitat you have there in the summer, the better chances are that they'll stick around.
In the summertime,
for the winter.
Get goldfinch, used to get red-winged blackbirds, and then they, where all the grass was, where I assume they were living, you know, when they started tearing that up, then we lost all those.
That's right. Yeah.
But we get a lot of birds in the during the summer, spring and fall.
You bet. And that'll increase as the shrubs get taller and begin to bear some fruit and things like that. They'll stick around a lot longer. What shrubs have you planted there?
Oh, let's see. We have, I'm trying to think what we have out here that have berries on them. But several of them have berries.
Okay.
Some don't. Some hostas where it's shady.
Right.
Hydrangeas. I can't think of the other ones now that have berries on them, but we've got 2 of them right here by in the back.
Okay. You want to think about planting shrubs that have, you want to think both persistent, those that hang on the shrubs into the fall, some of them actually in well into the winter, some even later than that into the spring, as well as preferred. In other words, shrubs or trees that have berries that they'll eat right away. So you want to have some of both. In order to keep things through the winter, you want to have some that persist on the shrub. So keep listening, and we're going to talk about a variety of different kinds of shrubs that are native shrubs that are really good to use in that situation. And you might be able to supplement what you already have planted.
Right. We also have a number of coneflowers, too,
wildflowers. Yeah, those are terrific, particularly early in the fall when the birds can feed off of those seed heads. But now they're either covered with snow or have been used. So they're this part of the winter is a really critical time between now and the end of March is really the toughest time for a lot of wildlife, not just because of the storms, but because a lot of the food sources that have been there are now depleted. And so they have to hunt around a lot more. And we often, if you think about it, this is often when we get our worst storms as well.
All right, thank you very much.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. I'm not sure my phones are working here, but let me try and see if they are working. No,
got the dial tone.
No, we're having some problems, but we have an engineer working on it.
All right.
I can really see that these animals are really struggling to find food. What do these birds eat now that they're hopping around looking for things, but there doesn't seem to be much around when everything's covered with snow, is there?
It is amazing. You've got certain birds, things like even nuthatches, but especially the woodpeckers, brown creepers, those sorts of things that actually are searching and finding insects,
even
in the wintertime.
Really? You're kidding.
Yeah,
so
they're searching below the bark
and
in between the bark.
Okay.
There are insect eggs and larvae and all kinds of things in there. You'll see the nuthatches going down the trees. Even chickadees, to some extent, will supplement their diet with this protein source. Now, they're going to use the seeds that are available, but they have a broader diet, and they'll find insects by probing underneath the bark and in the dead wood. It's one of the things that people ought to think about. You mentioned having brush piles, and brush piles are terrific for wildlife, both year-round, but those brush piles and log piles that were mentioned on the website that you talked about also provide areas for insects to overwinter, and therefore birds will get in there and find them as well.
Okay, Jim, we're going to take a break for a few minutes. We hope to fix our phones in that 5-minute period of time, and we'll be back as Wildlife Day continues on Talk of Iowa. It's 10:36. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese with Jim Pease. It's Wildlife Day on the program. Ever look at your computer screen, Jim, and it just goes completely gray? That's what happened. But things are working now. So we have everything's working. Lines are open, 866-780-9100. In fact, let's go first to an email from Crystal in Coralville. She says, I have birds, sparrows, she thinks, that have been living in the wall of my outdoor deck. I have tried mothballs and daily cleaning out of their nest. They keep coming back. I would like them relocated so they no longer poop all over my deck and deck chairs. Well,
I would suspect that they are living there in the summertime and not now. It is possible, certainly, that house sparrows, which are a non-native species, came to us from England. They may be using it in the summertime. They are hole nesters, and they will often use just about any hole they can, often in decks and that sort of thing. The best thing is excluding them, and that means screening the areas where they're getting in or making sure they're well in good repair and keeping them out of there, and that'll be the best thing. Certainly, house sparrows, if you allow them to, are very prolific, and we'll have lots and lots of them around. But if you're careful about making sure that the areas that they are nesting are screened off, you'll have fewer problems and fewer of them the following year. Relocating them won't do any good, but certainly screening off the areas where they're nesting certainly will. And that leads to something that I wanted to talk about here is as you look around the yard, you can see which shrubs or trees that you've planted are really good for wildlife, which ones they prefer, and which ones are really not so palatable. If I look around my yard, my dogwoods are nipped a little bit, but not very much. That means they're certainly not preferred. My elderberry and my viburnums are not nipped at all. But my hazel and choke cherries, boy, they really like those. Those are cut right off, right down to the top of the snow. So anything that is edible or desirable that I said is index finger sized or smaller is going to be nipped off if it's not fenced. Even things that are not very palatable they're eating that the bark off because they're really, really hungry. Rabbits have a thing called a cecum. It's a little basic biology for you here, Dennis. Have a cecum, and deer and other ruminants have a thing called a rumen. Those are both bags or sacks container that contain specialized bacteria, and that's what allows them. It's those bacteria that are able to break down the lignans and other complex things in cells in woody plants and allow them to use them to get the food value out of them. It's because we don't have a cecum or a rumen that we can't eat woody stuff and get any food value out of it. In fact, if you go out and you find one of those nice little round rabbit pellets, I encourage all of our listeners to do that.
Lots of them.
Yeah. Put it in your hand, break it open, and you'll see it's just sawdust. Mm. And that's basically, that's the part of the wood that they couldn't digest. Uh-huh. The other part, they've taken the food value out of that, and that's really what's left is just the sawdust. And so different plants vary in their digestibility. Some things that are highly digestible are the preferred plants, things in the prunus group, wild plum and cherries, that sort of thing, or populus or willows. Those are all really highly preferred. Some things a little less palatable, slightly less palatable, are things like oaks and dogwoods, that sort of thing. Hardly palatable at all are things like the viburnums and elderberries and sycamore and a few trees like that. But they're really and walnut, but they vary a lot in palatability and digestibility, and that's why you'll see this difference in the way they're browsed during the wintertime.
Seek them and you'll find them.
Yeah, that's right. Hide and go seek them. That's right.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that.
Or a rooming house, as you might think.
Oh, no. I was thinking of that, too. Let's go to Jeffrey in North Liberty. Hi, Jeffrey.
Good morning. Well, while waiting on your call, I'm so excited. I'm sitting here watching a pileated woodpecker move through the woods in my backyard.
Really?
But the point of my call was to recommend Sarah Stein to folks to read about this very subject of restoring the ecology of your backyard. Her book, Noah's Garden, is great for that. And I've often stacked up small branches and logs from my woods, and I get wrens in them from the summer, and then juncos, of course, in the winter.
Right.
And last really quick anecdote. I have a Cooper's hawk that's learned to chase birds into my glass windows and catch them before they hit the ground.
Is that right? Well, this is
amazing.
A skilled Cooper's. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your show this morning.
You bet. You
okay.
Bet.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Great call. 866-780-9100, Jim P's Wildlife Day. Pam is in Newton. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I was calling because last week a coworker came in the office, and she said she was on the interstate and noticed this mass of, she didn't know what it was, as she approached it. In her car, she realized that it was two deer that were sleeping, curled around each other, and pretty visible in the open off the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never seen that, and of course I never did either. The next day, I saw the same thing on one of the local roads leaving town.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was the oddest thing, to see deer sleeping in the open like that.
Well, they certainly will prefer cover if they can, if they have a choice, but there may be some other reason they've chosen that. This time of year, they're not being hunted, and they're a little not so careful about seeking cover. They do have a way of keeping warm. The hair on a deer is hollow. And it creates a dead air space then, even within the hairs and then certainly between the hairs, that is amazingly good insulation for them. And so they're curled up, making themselves as round as possible so that you expose the least amount of surface area to the wind. And curling up together, I suspect it was a doe and a fawn, very likely that or maybe two fawns. When I say fawns, most of the fawns are at least three-quarters grown now, if not more than that, and depending on when they were born, last spring or summer. And so they're not spotted anymore, but they are young of the year.
I usually see them standing by the side of the road, just waiting.
Waiting to cross.
It's like a Far Side cartoon.
Right.
Days.
Yeah. Yeah. They're daring each other. You know, these are teenage deer, and they're saying, okay, you go first. No, you go first. No. Jeez.
Well, thanks very much. I'm enjoying your show. I'm snowed in today.
Okay.
I think a lot of people are snowed in. Oh, it's been a tough winter. Jenna
it has.
Is,
it's been quite a winter.
It's been terrible. Just terrible. Jenna is next from Oxford. And Jenna, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to know what you can do to help rabbits and deer and wild turkeys.
Okay, very good. The best thing is certainly habitat. Now, I do have, and I've had lots of people call me and say, you know, deer are showing up at my bird feeders. We have seven turkeys showing up at ours as well. We don't encourage that, but certainly they're going to take advantage of what's available. I don't encourage that because they really need to, what they need in the long run is habitat and planting. That's why we're doing this show, to think about planting. What is it that you can plant next spring then and encourage through the winter that's going to give them the best kind of natural habitat, native habitat that they can survive in? The artificial feeding that we do at our bird feeders is really mostly for us. It's for our enjoyment. And it tends to concentrate wildlife. And in the long run, that's what you don't want to do, because that's how disease spreads easily. It makes them more subject to predation. In the long term, it's not a good thing. The last caller talked about how a Cooper's hawk has figured out how to chase birds, and they kill themselves in windows by flying into them, and then he catches them before they get to the ground. Well, that's a Cooper's hawk that's smart enough to take advantage of what as a predator of our concentrating birds in one area. So it's why that in general we say you shouldn't be putting out hay or corn and that to feed deer or pheasants or turkeys, because what really allows them to survive a winter is habitat, food, water, and shelter that is naturally available to them. It allows them to move around on the landscape and survive on their own.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have lines open now, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. The science writer is recommending, Jim, compost piles as being a good habitat provider. So there's lots you can do. He's recommending a sheet of corrugated iron. The tunnels are for reptiles, amphibians, mm-hmm. wood mice, and voles.
Yeah, certainly putting corrugated either plastic or iron on the ground is fine, and it does allow things to get underneath them. But that's more summer cover. They have to get deeper than that. Reptiles and amphibians have to get in areas because they're ectothermic. They take their temperature from the surrounding. They have to be in areas that are actually above freezing, or they will die. They will freeze to death. So a lot of things, for example, some frogs and turtles actually bury themselves in the mud at the base, at the bottom of ponds, and they're able to get enough oxygen from the water because their systems are slowed down so much. They get enough oxygen from the water around them through their skin that allows them to survive through the winter. You can provide what are called winter hibernacula for some critters by putting in rock piles, not just at the surface of the ground, but actually digging them below the ground. There are plans available for these kinds of things available on the internet and through some publications. But you need to go 3 to 4 feet underground, put larger rocks at the bottom, and gradually make them smaller on the way up so that they've got a way to get in, but can get underground far enough that their frost line doesn't affect them. So the good summer habitat are things on the surface of the ground, but for reptiles and amphibians, they have to be in places that are actually above freezing, or they freeze to death.
Okay. Let's go next to Jonathan, who is dialing in from Clive. And Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question. This winter, I have two species of woodpeckers I've never had before. Mm. I've got a pair of flickers, and in the last week, a second pair of downy woodpeckers has shown up at the feeder. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, what kind of territories do they take, and are they frequently seen in this area?
Well, it's surprising this year. Flickers are usually a woodpecker that goes farther south and for the winter. But I noticed on the Christmas bird counts this year, I was looking at the list the other day, and there were a number of sites around the state that all had flickers. And we've had flickers for the first time in many, many years through the winter. We've got a pair that are hanging around. Downies are a bird that normally overwinters, and there are often many pairs. You may not see them more than one or two at a time, but there are often as many as 10 or 15 pairs in a woodlot during the wintertime, because they'll form these mixed flocks in the wintertime of several different species, downies and hairy woodpeckers, chickadees, nuthatches, brown creepers, that all kind of move through the woods together. While they'll find their own separate areas in the summertime during the breeding season, the wintertime, being in a flock in the wintertime provides protection against predators, and also leaves more eyes to find food. So it's really a good thing to have a flock of mixed species around you. And so the flickers normally winter farther south, but this year, for some reason, there are a number around the state that have overwintered here.
Well, I'm just delighted to see them. They're a lot of fun to watch.
You bet. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jonathan, who was calling from Clive. And let's see, we will go next to Webster City and Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. Well, I'm really curious again. Remind us how much of the ewe will return after they've been shod by the deer and the upright trees that they favor, because I have quite a bit of damage.
Yeah.
But, I'm looking at, I have five returning downies and a couple three hairies. And then a red-bellied at the three suet feeders I have. And, you know, you just can't help but not put this out. Like you said, it's for our own pleasure. But
sure.
The deer are picking up the leftovers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're feeding heavily under the feeders, and in some areas, if your feeders are not high enough, they'll feed out of the feeder as well. So, yeah, it's it can be frustrating. I have dogs, and even with the dogs, the deer are coming, particularly at night, they're coming to the feeders. I look out, get up in the middle of the night, and they'll be grazing out there under the feeders. So it's not intentional. So we try and not leave much feed out there overnight and try and fill them each morning so that they're even coming during the daytime, so it is a tough one. You mentioned the ewes; they've been pretty devastated by the rabbits.
I thought it was the deer, but you think it's the rabbit.
Well, you can take a look at it, and if it's cut off just like you took a pruning shears at about a 45-degree angle, then it's rabbits, because rabbits have incisors, those front teeth, on the top and on the bottom. They're like little scissors, and they cut them right off. Deer only have incisors on the bottom jaw. They have gums on the top. So when they bite through a woody plant, they leave behind, it's only bit partway through, and they kind of tear off the rest of it. So you'll see that little tear mark. And so you can tell whether it's deer or rabbits just by looking at how they're torn off there. If it's nice and clean, 45-degree angle, rabbits. If it's not, it's probably deer. Now, if you take a look at the things that they've mowed down first, you'll see what the preferred species are, and it'll include things like hazelnut, serviceberry, perhaps some of your dogwoods, a wild plum, choke cherry. Things then that they don't tend to prefer as much are things like snowberry, elderberry, ninebark, viburnums, and chokeberry or aronia. Those are all native shrubs, and we have this sort of variability in how palatable they are to both deer and rabbits. And so you want to mix. You want some on there. The last caller was asking about what we can do to help them through the winter as well. So there are some things that they'll certainly prefer, but there are things that they won't browse as much. So you want to mix on your property so that you don't get completely mowed down in the wintertime every year, at least. And certainly the things that are preferred you can protect by fencing them in the fall of the year before we get into the snow. And that'll help a lot, but you need to fence them if they are highly preferred.
And will they come back this spring if they've been shot on pretty good?
It depends on the species. Certainly the ewes that you mentioned, those are non-native, but they are often eaten by deer and to some extent by rabbits. They will possibly resprout from the stems. Most of the shrubs, the dogwoods, serviceberry, hazelnut, viburnums, they'll all resprout. Wild plum, they'll do just fine. Some of the trees don't do as well in terms of resprouting, but many of them will.
I'm looking at my neighbor's, and it's shot halfway up. It's an upright juniper kind.
They won't. Junipers, in particular, will not do very well if they're cut off or totally debarked. They will not resprout from the roots, whereas most of the others will.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. 866-780-9100. Wildlife Day with Jim Pease. We have lines open. I saw a bunny yesterday in my hopping across this big pile of snow, and he looked fat and happy, or she.
Yeah.
He was, or she was, apparently doing okay.
Yeah. Well, of course, it can be a bit of a fooler. You really have to pick them up, Dennis.
Really?
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is.
And because if the fur is in good shape. Now, I have been seeing some squirrels that have mange on them. Mm. Mange is actually caused by a mite that burrows beneath the skin surface, destroys the hair follicles, and the hair falls out. So that's becoming pretty common, and we'll see more of that towards spring. As breeding takes place, it gets to other squirrels in a population then. And occasionally rabbits, very rarely rabbits will get it. But you can't really tell. That fur kind of covers up even a very skinny critter may look fat and sassy right now. But, they might be doing just fine in your neighborhood.
And hawks, for the first time in my subdivision, I was so excited a week ago to see one hanging around. I don't know if it's a Cooper's Hawk or what it is, but what was he or she waiting for, a rabbit or what?
Well, if it was a red-tailed hawk, they're probably waiting around for rabbits or squirrels.
Oh, okay.
If it's a Cooper's Hawk or a sharp shin, they're bird eaters, so they're waiting around. They'll eat some other things, but they're waiting around for birds that probably at feeders or that they can pick off right out of the air.
I see.
They'll also be, you know, waiting around for voles that may get on the surface, but now with the snow so deep, the voles are pretty much under the snow, and they're well protected against most hawks. Although foxes are able to detect foxes and coyotes are able to detect the movement under the snow, and you'll see foxes diving through the snow to get at the voles that might be a foot or more below the snow.
20th century vole, remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's try to get one more caller in. Carl is calling from Iowa City. Hi, Carl. Carl, are you there?
I have a Tom from Iowa City.
Sorry about that. Go ahead with your question.
I was wondering if your guests had any information on how our pheasant populations are doing this year. This seems like it's the third bad winter we've had in a row, and I know the numbers have been down, and I just wondered if he knew anything.
Well, there are no surveys going on right now, but they won't be until we get the crowing surveys in the spring. But I'm pretty certain they're not doing well in the state. We've lost hundreds of thousands of acres of CRP, which is traditionally good habitat for them. It's gone back under the plow again with the loss of that program. We haven't replaced it with other good habitat areas. That combined with very, very deep snows, my bet is the spring population is not going to look good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Unfortunately. So.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Sorry we called you Carl there. Maybe we can call him Carl once in a while and he won't be too upset with us. Well, that theme music means we're out of time. It's been a very interesting hour. Lots of interesting and valuable suggestions on how we can all help wildlife by making some simple modifications in our yards and gardens. Thank you, Jim Pease.
My pleasure. Get out there and enjoy the outdoors.
Okay. But not tonight. It's going to be too cold. We'll see you back next month, Jim.
All
thanks
right,
a lot.
Take care.
Jim Pease is Professor Emeritus at Iowa State University. Christoph Mai was our assistant producer today. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for listening.